On the line now, I have Dr. Declan Jordan of the Regional Economics Research Centre in UCC. Good morning to you, Dr. Jordan.
Hello, how are you?
Okay, well, I mean, some people now, when they hear the word Brexit, they sort of coil up into the shell and climb back in, but it's sort of getting, even though it's getting boring, it's still getting more interesting, and I think the more sort of the British say and the more the Irish say, it just seems, as I say, get more interesting. So give us your take on it. You're sort of a little bit down about it and not too optimistic.
I'm an economist, so you know, we're always criticised for being too pessimistic, but I'm trying to be optimistic, but the British government isn't making it easy for me. The more we learn about the British government's negotiating strategy, the more it seems that a no-deal Brexit is most likely. What came out last week, the no-deal Brexit implications, those reports that they brought out about what would happen if there wasn't a deal, really should have scared the daylights out of everybody in the UK. But instead it seemed to have the opposite effect. It seemed to embolden the Brexiteers, saying, well, this is just a cost we have to pay for getting back our sovereignty. So I think when you have this mentality, this kind of nonsensical mentality that seems to be prevalent in the UK now at government level anyway, that the EU needs the UK more than the UK needs the EU, then I can't really see how you break that down.
Do you think that they're deluding themselves in that sense?
Oh, they are, absolutely. And research that that's been presented at the conference we have down in Cork on regional science, implications of Brexit shows that the UK is far more at risk from a Brexit in terms of damage to its economy than the rest of the European Union is. Ireland also is far worse than all the other EU regions that will be left there. So we're the innocent casualties in this. But yeah, it's quite clear that the UK is not that important to EU regions in terms of trade.
Okay.
Whereas the EU is very important for the UK.
Okay. Well, can I ask you this, take it out and just throw it out there and see what you think with what's been said, as you said last week, and also I think it was Dominic Raab had come out yesterday and talked seemingly with two tongues as well. Do you think that they'll do an Irish thing on it, and maybe when it sort of gets too complicated before next March, that they will ask to vote again?
They should. I hope they do. I hope they do. I think the chances of it are small enough. And even if they did vote again, I think the chances of it passing would be low enough too, even given what we know now. Because there seems to be an idea in the UK that, well, look, the government, the people have spoken with the, respect the wishes of the people, and therefore even those who voted remain might vote to leave in order to, you know, to avoid a situation where we have a second referendum. This doesn't make any economic sense, and it makes less and less economic sense, and it makes less and less political sense and social sense. But you know, if we were looking for sense, we wouldn't have had the last year and a half. This wouldn't have happened if we were looking at what would happen from a sensible perspective. It really seems to be that the UK attitude to the European Union is that, well, we can either shoot ourselves in the foot or we can shoot ourselves in the head. And we're willing to shoot ourselves in the head. So you better give us a deal, or you better negotiate with us. And I don't think that's a credible negotiating strategy. I don't think the European Union really is going to react well to a situation like that. And everything we see from UK politicians, well, say the leading Brexiteers, Boris Johnson, Michael Gove, and Jacob Rees-Mogg, is that they're trying to ride two horses at the same time. They've left the government so they can say, well, you know, if Brexit turns out to be a positive, we can claim the credit. If it turns out to be a disaster, which it probably will be, they can say, well, look, we wouldn't have done it that way. So they're trying to put themselves, their own political fortunes, ahead of the country's fortunes. Now, many politicians do that, but usually the national interest will convince enough politicians to put that first over their own. But there doesn't seem to be anyone in the UK who's able to stand up to the Brexiteers and able to just say stop. This is not good for us.
Yeah, except for a lot of high figures and a lot of the public are saying as well. And I mean, Cameron just threw it out there. I don't think he thought it was going to happen, but well, it did anyway. The interregional aspect of it, can I ask you about that? How it'll affect interregional? You reckon that to be some imbalances across the way?
Well, this is it. I mean, Brexit is not going to have the same impact on every sector, every business sector, and therefore it's not going to have the same effect on every region. If we take a look, for example, at the UK, well, this comes back to why Brexit happened in the first place. Brexit is not a solution to any problem. Brexit isn't going to fix the problems that the UK had. And they weren't significant in the aggregate, but they were significant on a regional basis. Mm-hmm. So you have Wales, the South West, Devon and Cornwall, you have the North East up around the Tyne, Newcastle and Sunderland, all lagging behind London and the South East. And those regions just feeling left out, feeling left behind, not having enough jobs, not having enough opportunity, and really the British government not caring about those regions. Mm. So they said, "Well, look, this isn't working for us. We're going to vote no. We're going to vote to leave because we need to change things." Now, when Britain does leave, it's those regions, those poorer regions, Wales and South West and the North East, that are going to be hit the worst. So if anything, spatial inequality is going to increase. So those regions who benefit from EU transfers, actually, because they're so poor, will lose those transfers. And the things that they deal in, the things that they make, will be behind tariff walls. And that means that they'll fall even further behind London, which is relying on financial tariffs.
And how do you think that will reflect in Ireland?
In Ireland, it'll be a similar thing. I mean, the city regions probably won't be as affected. You know, Dublin, Cork, Galway, there on Limerick, there won't be as badly hit as, say, rural areas or areas outside of those city regions, because those rural areas or poorer areas rely more on agriculture. They rely more on food and beverages, basic manufacturing, and those businesses are very low margin, so they're very tight margin, and they export to the UK a lot.
It's amazing that I was just going to say you mentioned food and all that and drink, and I was only reading an article yesterday. Excuse me, and two things. One part of it was that about beverages and if a hard border came in, the paperwork that's attached to anything that contains sugar and stuff like that, it would be an absolute nightmare, especially for Irish. So that's just coming to my mind as you were saying that. And also, and of course, being an economist, I also read that the spend is down. People are sort of being very, very wary over the next couple of months with the spend as well. So these are a myriad of problems.
There's a couple of issues. There's a couple of sources of risk for us. One is just if we go behind a tariff wall. So if we have to pay a tariff to sell our goods in the UK, we're more expensive, so fewer will be able to sell less. Then also, even if you can operate at a tariff, if you can still make a profit, the UK economy will suffer from Brexit. So you'll have fewer customers even at the higher price. And then also you have the problem of investment, as you mentioned. So people are just saying, well, wait a minute now, hang on. Why are we investing here in expanding our capacity when our main market or one of our main markets could be closed to us? What businesses need to do is they need to start looking at other markets. Easy for me to say. I'm an academic. I'm not responsible for anybody's job. But they do need to look at other markets and engage with Enterprise Ireland and engage with county enterprise boards to try and find other markets. But that takes a long time to do. It takes a long time to leave a market of 60 million people with the same language behind that's so close to us and start looking out at the rest of the EU, looking at China, looking at Asia or the US. And then the US will have its own problems as well. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to be a tough couple of years for those businesses that are exposed to the UK and exposed to Brexit, especially given now that it looks like a no deal is the most likely outcome.
Yeah, well, just to sort of speculate a little bit, I mean, to keep talking about the special relationship with Ireland and England, and we did get a special deal with the border. How do you think the rest of the countries, I mean, even people outside the EU and America, but it's especially Europe, other European countries, how they react and say, hold on here, what's so special about Ireland? That sort of thing, that would, you know, happen afterwards. Mm. How do you think that would reflect on everything?
Well, I think the EU has been good for Ireland, has been good to Ireland in the negotiations. The Irish government did very well to get the backstop and the border put on the first three things to be agreed before there could be further negotiations. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem there, of course, is that the UK is going back on its agreement. Not the first time it's rolled back on an agreement with Ireland, but it's going back on its agreement on the backstop. It comes down to the fact, and it's inescapable, that if the UK leaves, and as long as Northern Ireland remains part of the UK, there will be an EU border on the island of Ireland. Now, either it's a border, and Brexit was won on the idea that you secure your border. Mm-hmm. So immigration was the main argument for leaving the EU. Now, I think actually that immigration isn't a problem at all. There is no reason to reduce immigration at all, but that was the argument. So if you've got a border in Ireland with the EU, how are you going to manage that? Never mind from a product perspective, because you know a lot of the trade that goes across the border is predictable trade. It's the same things that are mm-hmm. that will cross the border in the middle of March that will go in the middle of April next year. But it does. And we have a common travel area, it does mean that there won't be border checks on immigration. So I can see in late 2019, when this happens, we'll have Jacob Rees-Mogg and we'll have Michael Gove and Nigel Farage talking about, you know, immigrants swarming over the Irish mm-hmm. border into Northern Ireland, and once you're in Northern Ireland, then they can come to the rest of the UK.
Yeah.
So it's a border, and either you secure your borders or you don't. Mm-hmm. Whatever you feel about that.
Yeah, because
they have to do that if they're going to have a credible answer to the immigration, what they perceive to be an immigration problem.
Yeah, well, they have to show that they're doing the job as well, and they're sort of on par with the rest of Europe as well. Can I ask you, like a lot of people might say, you know, that you're being a bit pessimistic, and there's only, mm-hmm. I think there's 84 papers to come out from Britain, and there's only 24... even though time is running out, so we've another, 60 or so papers.
Yeah,
to get out.
Those are the really bad ones.
They're holding them back to the end.
Yeah.
Do you think they look... So that's where a lot of people say you're being too pessimistic. Wait till you see the results, but you think they're the worst ones are going to come out. Do you think they look...
I think I'm trying to be optimistic, but if this is my optimistic view, I hate to hear what my pessimistic view is, you know? It's... Well, I mean, the thing is, it's always the answer comes, or it comes back to, well, look, it's in the UK's interest to do a deal, it's in Europe's interest to do a deal will be done. And when it comes down to it, all this is just posturing and that saber-rattling, but when it comes down to it, they know that their bread is buttered on, both mm-hmm. the EU and the UK, and a deal will happen at the last minute. From an economic perspective, that makes sense. But there's no evidence that economics are good. What's good for the economy or good for society is driving what's going on over there. If it was the case that what was good for the economy would decide what they would do, they wouldn't have voted for Brexit in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be in this situation, and it certainly wouldn't be taking. You know what? 2 months before this deal should be wrapped up, when we still don't know what the deal is going to entail. I think the source of my pessimism is that I think there's an ideological problem in the UK, in the British government.
Mm-hmm.
It's an ideological approach to the EU. They want out of the EU at any cost. And that's bad for Ireland because we're the innocent casualty. We're actually going to have as big cost as a lot of the regions in the UK. And we have had no say. We've had no vote in on Brexit. And we're just going to be one of the casualties of it. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to see somebody. I mean, I would really like to see somebody in the Tory party, or even in Labour, which I think is absolutely as well derogated its leadership. I'd like to see somebody come out and say, look, we need to stop this. We need to actually get a coalition together between the Tories, and this is too serious to, ruin the economy for 40 years, Jacob Rees-Mogg said. Yeah. You've got 40 years for the benefits of Brexit appear. Are you going to, that's a generation, are you going to ruin the opportunities for a generation just to get some idea that in a globalised world you can get sovereignty back? It just doesn't make sense. And that's where I'm struggling with it. Okay. It doesn't make sense. And anybody looking at it doesn't make sense. So when is the sense going to kick in?
Okay, well the long view, if it's going to take that long, I was going to ask you a question. I don't know what makes the question sort of out of, but I'll ask it anyway. I was just wondering that if things happened a bit quicker and things seem to be going really well after all the negotiations are done and things settle down, and maybe in 5 years' time people around Europe are going, and governments around Europe are going, geez, they're doing much better independently. Do you think that there'll be any sort of idea in ahead that, you know, the Europe could break up if Britain goes well?
Look, we're in the realm.
I know it's gone way into the future.
What we would have thought, but there are things that we thought we would never have seen. There's things that were unimaginable that are happening, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, all we have to do is look at who's in the White House and say, well, that could never happen. That could never happen. Yeah. And the rise of a far right party in Germany, well, that could never happen. And these things are happening. So, you know, we have to be kind of a bit humble as well and say, you know, we really don't know what the future holds. If something like that happened, if it turned out to be a success, a combination of things, maybe the U.S. economy recovers and, maybe a better deal is struck. Well, then I think in that situation, you would have calls in other EU countries to leave the EU, or to at least to slow down the rate at which it's the rate at which it's joining itself together. I think that would be very bad. I am a fan of the European Union. I think it has been very good, not just for Ireland, but I think it's been very good for Europe. There has been peace, apart from the Balkans, there has been peace in Europe for 60 years, 70 years. And, it came out of that. And I think Europe is stronger when it's together. Europe struggles, I think, or the EU struggles from this idea that it's trying to do away with nationalism, it's trying to do away with national pride and country pride. And it isn't, actually. If there's any institution that has done more to protect languages, languages in trouble or heritage or cultures that are declining in Europe, it's been the European Union. So I think it would be a shame if it did, but I could see it happening. Certainly, I could see it happening.
Okay.
I put a low probability on it, though.
Do you think overall, talking about economics to an extent, it seems to be to perception that people have now that the rich are getting richer, poor are getting poorer, and it's sort of a veneer that's there. Now, for instance, Ireland, supposedly being one of the richest countries in the world, and yet the problem we have with the health and homelessness and stuff like that. Do you think that will change? We don't seem to mirror some of the other countries in Europe that are doing, maybe not as rich as we're supposed to be, but they're doing much better for the public.
And I suppose it's kind of a different model that we have. We are one of the richest countries in the world. But we have these intractable problems we just don't seem to be able to fix, like housing, the health service. And education, I think, is we have a very good education system, but it's straining. But I think if you look at the Scandinavian countries and European Union countries are more social democratic, they have more a stronger welfare state, they have higher rates of tax. Mm-hmm. When I hear Irish commentators complain about our health service and education and so on and housing, we have to realise that this is what we've chosen. It isn't the case that we have constraints on what we can do. We don't. We have no constraints on what we can do. We've chosen to operate our health system like this, and we've chosen to operate our housing.
But when you say we've chosen, you mean our
the
politicians?
Government that we've elected.
The politicians, indeed. Yeah.
Well. Yeah, but it's the governments we elect. I mean, the politicians don't fall out of the sky.
Yeah,
the politicians are put there by us.
We keep electing them,
and people elect them. I mean, you know, we look back at just before the Celtic Tiger, we had three Fianna Fáil governments put in there, and at the time they were talking about cutting stamp duty and the property. Everybody knew the property market was overheating, but they kept going and they got elected again. There was no incentive for any politician to say, whoa, stop, slow down here now, because they wouldn't have got elected. So, but who do you blame? Do you blame the politicians for that? Or do you blame the electorate who put the politician in there? I think there's equal blame on both sides. But if we want to fix all these things, if we want to reduce inequality, if we want to fix the housing market, well, then we need to have a really good, hard look at ourselves and make choices and say, well, look, we're willing to maybe pay higher taxes, to invest more in education, to invest in social housing, to build public housing.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you in some sense, Dr. Jordan, if the money that the taxes that they increased was used wisely, but they can't even use the money that they have coming in wisely.
No, so. and that's right. I mean, more money isn't going to fix the problem, but more money is needed for the problems. And I think, but if you just put more money into our health system, for example, it'll just disappear. Mm-hmm. Now, I suppose you do need more money for things like carers, and you need them for, disability services. They are underfunded. But again, that's the HSE making choices, and politicians, to whom the HSE is answerable, making choices on what they're going to spend that money on. Mm-hmm. There does have to be reform, absolutely reform. But I think the reform that we need isn't so much... I think the reform that we need is really in how we think about these problems and how we think about society. This idea that, you know, we pay taxes, because we want a stake in society, because we want to do things for society and for people. Paying taxes isn't a bad thing. Like, everybody goes, oh, I don't want to pay an extra euro in taxes. In fact, if you switch it around and say, well, actually, you know, I need to pay taxes because that's how society works, and that's how we get a better society, a more equal society.
Okay.
Then I think that changes the game, changes the outcome of it.
Okay, we'll still have to wait and see. I'd love to be talking longer, because when you think about NAM and all the vulture funds and all now, that's what I meant when I said about, we choose the politicians, but what they do, what we give them the money for.
Yeah.
Giving them more money, to me, is not a good idea, because they seem to waste
it. I think maybe the way we elect our politicians has to change too.
As well,
all those countries all have list systems, so we don't elect politicians that's going to get, a hospital in Cork, you have somebody in Kerry says, oh, I need a hospital in Kerry as well.
Petrol pump the politics.
Yeah. You elect a list, and you elect people to represent Ireland rather than their own area.
Okay, listen, you're very good. I'm sorry for keeping you for so long. I know you were trying to be optimistic, but do you think they'd get the extension if they don't come to an agreement? Do you think that even Europe
is saying,
come on?
They may, but I'm not sure it'll make any difference. I mean, okay. If this was a technical issue, if this was just a technical problem where they needed a bit of time to sort out, you know, putting something in place, putting a certain number of jobs in place or something like that, then you say, fine, an extension makes sense. If it's an ideological problem, then the extension doesn't make any difference. You're not actually going to change the way they think about it.
Okay, I thought they'd sort of say, like, oh, go on, think about it. Maybe you'll change your mind and have another vote.
Maybe. if a soft deal, if we had to wait 6 months for a good deal rather than 6 months with no deal, I think we'd give up to 6 months, no problem. But I think it would actually be seen as a kind of weakness that would harden the Brexiteers.
Okay, listen, it's been a great pleasure having you on. As I said, I'd love to talk to you more, maybe some other time. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. That was Dr. Declan Jordan of the Regional Economics Research Centre and UCC. Terrific conversation. I really enjoyed that. I hope you got it as well. I know sort of the ins and outs of Brexit. I don't understand all of it, and some of the economics I don't understand either, but he made it sound simple enough anyway for people to understand.